Chris, good afternoon. Welcome to the conference altogether. Make a few announcements. The New York City equivalent of the Oasis Anti-Immigrant Amendment Project announced that there will be a protest against the Revolution Bookstore here in New York. The conference is organized to continue to join the counter protest against these races. At the same time, we encourage other conference attendees to continue to participate in discussions and debates with partners, as this is also a key way we will be able to enroll the left. That not only confronts the amendment today, but throughout the coming year, across the country, whenever and wherever they spread their hate. Also, don't forget that tonight at 7:30 in Learner Auditorium, Amy Goodman will hold a discussion with Italian journalist Juliana Serena, who was shot by U.S. forces in Iraq, about her ordeal in Iraq, her new book, Friendly Fire, and the real story of the U.S. occupation of Iraq. And finally, be sure to look through your registration materials for information regarding tonight's parties and the other evening events. Just want to talk briefly about how this session is going to go. Bob's going to speak for about 35 to 40 minutes, after which there'll be time for intervention speakers from the floor. We have speaker slips. So after he's done, we'll just pass these out, and then as I get them, I'll try to make sure that questions and disagreements get out to the floor early on. So please, if you have questions, disagreements, try to get those out as quickly as possible.
Is the mic on?
Do we need it?
Hey.
All right. I'd rather not use the microphone because can I project? Is this okay? People hear me? So to begin, what does Walmartization of America mean? We're definitely beginning to hear a lot more about it. Lately, there's been a slew of books put out, and daily there's countless articles on Walmart in the newspaper. Now, to begin to answer that question, I want to put forward what I believe is the best and, a sadly ironic illustration of that process. And that illustration can be found in Cleveland, Ohio, where a Walmart store is now under construction. First, why Cleveland? Well, in the 1960s, Cleveland, Ohio sat in basically the geographic center of the manufacturing belt of the United States. The city was flush with well-paying union jobs, and the availability of those jobs was continually increasing, led in most part by this city's steel industry. However, by the late 1970s, the process of industrial growth that the city was familiar with moved backwards rapidly as capital escaped the cost of unionized labor and located elsewhere. Now, over the next two decades, total employment in Cleveland plummeted 13%, and there was a 40% overall drop in manufacturing, which is, it's enormous when you think about that over two decades. And in the steel industry, that meant 15,000 jobs. Now, today, the steel industry in Cleveland is a shadow of its former self. The steel factories sit basically in this river valley that cuts through the edge of the downtown area. And in the 1960s, that area was brimming with workers, but today it's basically a ghost town. And this is the process that really, it's this process we're talking about in Cleveland, it went all through the Midwest, So we have the term Rust Belt, If you go from you can start in Pittsburgh, you go to Youngstown, Gary, all the way up to Detroit. This term, the Rust Belt and deindustrialization, it's more bluntly, it's about the beating down of organized labor in the United States. So then back to the steel industry in Cleveland. So why the steel industry? And this is where the sad irony of this story comes into play, because where this whole 30-year process that I just talked about, where it has led us, becomes very clear when you go past that same steel valley in Cleveland and you look over and you see the construction of a Walmart Supercenter really in the heart of that old area. And it looks like that Walmart should be pushing steel out its front doors, really. It's like the juxtaposition of the two is really ironic. And what should be sacred ground for the labor movement in this country, the country's largest purveyor of anti-union politics, is building its super center. And I think that's really where we've gone in 30 years. Now, again, I picked this example because I feel it best explains in short what has happened in the labor movement. That being a move from good-paying union jobs with health care, retirement plans, to just the opposite today. And Walmart is not only helping further that process, but it's accelerating it. And what really is the race to the bottom for the working class in this country as well as around the globe. Now, before I go into a tirade about Walmart, I just want to say that we want to talk about the Walmartization of America, but the question is also about so much more. It's about, obviously, what's happened in the labor movement, but it's also about what's happened on the left in this country. It's about the movements today. It's about globalization. And just as importantly, it's about the economic system that we live under today and the utter insanity and the awful conditions that it forces people to live in. And in the second half of the talk, I'm going to go into that more. But so why Walmart? Now, for some of this might not be a question. Some of you may have worked at a Walmart. Some of you have maybe even tried to organize a Walmart into a union store. You know, some of you may just be coming familiar with it. Now, for starters, Walmart is the largest private employer in the United States and employs 1.3 million people, all of which are non-union, plus another 300,000 people worldwide. For the better part of the last decade, it was the world's largest corporation, with yearly profits topping $9 billion. And it's only going to get bumped this year by ExxonMobil. So it's really nice competition up there at the top. Its economic size, alongside of its market share, is mind-boggling. And a lot of people doing research on Walmart like to have fun with this stuff. Like, for instance, 90% of all Americans live within 15 miles of a Walmart. Its one-day sales in the fall of 2003 totaled $1.42 billion, and that was, again, one day sales. It's got a GDP that's larger than 36 countries. So it's pretty amazing when you start to look at the facts. Another example of its size, in 2004, it grew by the equivalent, and this is just in 2004 alone, it grew by the equivalent of a Dow Chemical, a PepsiCo, a Microsoft, or a Lockheed Martin, and you can take your pick out of them. And I think these are all good examples to sort of put forward its size, but I think the best example that works in understanding its power is how many major American corporations rely on Walmart as their biggest consumer, and it's quite a list. It includes Disney, Procter & Gamble, Kraft, Revlon, Gillette, Campbell's Soup, R.J. Reynolds, and what it translates into, I think, is the even more astounding thing. It means that Walmart is the nation's largest seller of, and now stick with me on this, DVDs, groceries, toys, guns, diamonds, CD, apparel, dog food, detergent, jewelry, sporting goods, video games, sock, bedding, toothpaste. It's the country's largest film developer, optician. It has the country's largest private truck fleet. It's the country's largest energy consumer, and it's also the country's largest real estate developer. And additionally, Walmart is also, this one's kind of mind-blowing too, it's the single largest revenue generator for Hollywood. And we could really continue all afternoon with little anecdotes regarding the size of Walmart, but that's not why we're here. We're here because of what, you know, what many are calling the Walmart effect, that it's low wages, little or no employee health care, sweatshops, environmental damage, government subsidies, and non-union practices. Now, Walmart is really a laborer's 500-pound gorilla in the room, leading the way in corporate globalization. And for workers, again, this means the race to the bottom, from Cleveland to New York, Germany, China, and into South America. And with Walmart, that has a corporate face, one that's destroying lives, but also one that needs to be a pole of attraction for future labor struggles. Walmart's slogan is everyday low prices. And really, to follow through on that kind of promise, something somewhere has to be cut to help ensure that Walmart does, in fact, have those low prices. And those cuts really begin with the paychecks that Walmart employees take home on a weekly basis. Now, as I stated earlier, Walmart has about 1.3 million employees throughout the United States, and each one being non-union. A study by Forbes magazine found that on average, Walmart employees earn $7.50 an hour. What works out after 1 year to be like $15,060 a year. Now, the federal poverty line for a family of three is at $15,000 a year. So, I mean, they're basically paying poverty wages for most of its employees. Additionally, paid overtime for employees is out of the question, but Walmart will not shy away from making people work off the clock. It was estimated in 2002 that Walmart shortchanged its Texas workers by $150 million over 4 years for regularly making them work through their 50-minute break. Walmart's, you know, it's received some bad publicity lately because of this. In the book The Walmart Effect, Charles Fishman points out that Walmart has recently taken to explaining the retail jobs like those it offers, although paying double the minimum wage, are nonetheless intended as supplemental income, not as support for a family. The problem is that for two-thirds of Americans, Walmart is the single largest employer in the state where they live. So Walmart likes to use the term associate in reference to its workers to sort of give the perception, you know, that we're all on equal footing here. But at the same time, their CEO, Lee Scott, made over $17 million in total compensation in 2004. And not to cry for CEOs, but that's twice the national average for CEOs, but also 871 times as high as a Walmart worker. And then additionally, the four heirs to the Walmart throne after Sam Walton died, they're each worth $20 billion each, right? They're on the top 10 of the richest people in the world. They have they're worth more than the yearly GDP of Egypt. So the term associate really, you know, it doesn't really hold any water anymore. Of course, the crimes of Walmart don't really end with its measly salaries at all. It offers. Walmart is the leader in the attack on employee health care. A Harvard Business School study found that in 2002, it spent $3,500 per employee on health care, compared with $5,600 for the average corporation. In 2004, over 38% of its employees spent a sixth of their salary alone on health care. In addition, Walmart refuses to pay for child vaccinations and many routine procedures. And to top it off, really, it refuses to pay for contraception of any kind. And just a side note for anybody trying to organize Walmart, it actually says in the company's health care plan, they specifically say that if you're injured during an illegal occupation, riot, or insurrection, you won't be covered. So that's just a note to people. The New York Times reported that fewer than 45% of Walmart's 1.3 million workers received the company's health care plan, while 46% of children of Walmart workers are either uninsured or covered by Medicaid. And actually, we don't need either a Harvard study or the New York Times to tell us about the poor health insurance coverage that it provides. There was a leaked memo from a Walmart exec, the memo by Suzanne Chambers, who's Walmart's executive vice president for benefits, actually points out to the company's board of directors just how poor it is. She says, Walmart's critics can easily exploit some aspects of our benefits offerings to make their case. In other words, our critics are correct in some of their observations. Specifically, our coverage is expensive for low-income families, and Walmart has a significant percentage of associates and their children on public assistance. And she's right. Florida, for instance, has 12,300 Walmart employees, or their dependents are on Medicaid. In Georgia, over 10,000 children of Walmart employees on the state's health care plan. And in Alabama, almost 4,000 children of employees are on Medicaid at an estimated yearly cost of somewhere between $1.7 and $2.4 million in that state alone. And Walmart's obviously aware of the situation, and it's actually encouraging it. In a speech last year, the CEO, Lee Scott, said, in some of our states, the public program may actually be a better value with relatively high income limits to qualify and low premiums. Of course, you know, the question is asked, is better value to whom? Now, healthcare isn't the only area where Walmart relies on the government to foot the bill. It's also done incredibly well in receiving massive subsidies. After Hurricane Katrina, people probably remember that Walmart basically went on was a massive publicity campaign, bragging about all the donations that it was sending into the South that was destroyed. However, while giving out those donations, Walmart forgot to mention that the company itself had received some heavy donations from the state in the past. From Louisiana alone, the subsidies it acquired were $64.3 million. It received $7 million alone for a New Orleans super center that it was going to build. So while Walmart was bragging about what it was giving away, we should have been saying, you should be giving a hell of a lot more. Overall, it's estimated that total across the country, Walmart received about $1 billion in subsidies from either state or local governments to pay from everything from infrastructure to job training and work recruitment. And the money for work recruitment is probably the strangest, considering the fact that Walmart likes to brag about the fact that when a new store opens up, it'll be flooded with thousands of applications for a few hundred positions. Now, those that do get hired at Walmart not only have to deal with the miserable salary and the health care benefits, but also the miserable working conditions, which are really the other half of the equation for Walmart employees. Now, this starts with the company cheer that employees not only have to endure, but participate in. And that may be bad, but it doesn't compare to some of the other tactics the company will go through in order to control its employees. In 2004, the New York Times revealed that Walmart was engaging in the practice of locking janitors and other third-shift employees in stores overnight. One Walmart exec said that doors were locked to protect associates and the store from intruders. However, nothing could really be further from the truth. In fact, Walmart's managers actually were in the practice of chaining the emergency doors shut from the outside. People can, you can just see where this leads. It finally ended when one Savannah, Georgia, stalker collapsed and he died inside the store while basically the paramedics were on the other half of the chain emergency door on the outside. Now, those that have read Barbara Ehrenreich's book, Nickel and Dime, you might be familiar with some of the other conditions that employees have to endure, starting with the initial 8-hour orientation, the overbearing managers at the companies, and the company's practice of moving employees around the store so they can't actually develop any kind of friendship because, if you develop a friendship, you might start unionizing. And additionally, to like add to all this, hourly workers aren't allowed to date one another without the consent of the district manager, which is really absurd. Walmart is also guilty of course, sexual discrimination in hiring and wages. Women at Walmart earn 6.2% less than men in similar jobs, while female store managers only account for about 15% of Walmart's management and got less than $16,000 a year than their male counterparts. And of course, where sexual discrimination is occurring, you can be sure that racist hiring practices are lurking nearby. And for Walmart, that's very true. Its truck fleet is about 10,000 large, and only 2 to 3% of its drivers are African American. While on average in this country, on-the-road drivers, 15% of which in this country are black. So currently, Walmart is tied up in lawsuits for both its discrimination against women and its racist hiring practice. So these conditions aren't really new developments in Walmart. They've actually been the model for Walmart that was put forward by Sam Walton, who died in 1992. And his model was basically put forward on putting the employees last. The fact that Walmart sprouted out of Arkansas with its business model and non-union tactics, it's not a coincidence. It actually has been decades in the making. The company was founded in Arkansas, where unions have traditionally been weak to non-existent. In fact, the first Walmart store was located just across the street to a monument to the Confederacy, right? So it's really, it's just as much you know, the monument itself is just as much as about the breaking up of radical Reconstruction in this country after the Civil War, which again meant breaking the backs of labor. The Ozarks, the area of Arkansas where Walmart started, wasn't only ignored by organized labor, it was also ignored by really any decent industrialization and decent wages. And because the population was so thoroughly poor, large grocery stores or any large retail chains basically stayed away from the area. So for Sam Walton starting out there, the trick was really to start a retail chain in Arkansas, but to deliver the products as cheap as possible so people could actually buy. And the cheap wages was the main way to resolve the question. So like in 1956, Walton's paying his employees 50 cents an hour while the federal minimum wage is at $1 an hour. And he actually fought the government for years to be able to try to maintain that, only to lose later on. Word of mouth from the coming out of the mouth of the executives of Walmart. We don't have to go very far to confirm the poor labor conditions that the employees have to endure. Walton himself actually said in his autobiography, which nobody should probably read. In the beginning, I was so chintzy, I really didn't pay my employees very well. It wasn't that I was initially heartless. I was so obsessed with turning in a profit margin of 6% or higher that I ignored some of the basic needs of our people. And then he ends the quote by saying, and I feel bad about it. But Sam Walton's bad feelings never really amounted to anything the whole time he spent in Walmart throughout the southwest of the country in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But during this whole time, Walmart's ignored by Wall Street because Wall Street basically sees it as like this backwoods retailer. And so cheap prices and low wages in the meantime was the way that the company was developing distribution methods that would allow it basically to bypass distributors and go to the producers for products. Now, the whole idea was, again, to find a better way to deliver the goods as cheaply as possible. When Sam Walton died in 92, the company was about one-fifth its present size. It's only really in the later half of the 1990s that Walmart becomes a giant as it is and blows past Sears as the country's largest retailer. Now, again, part of the explanation for the size of Walmart lies in its ability to get every cent it can from its workers, but another lies in its means of distribution. Now, I had mentioned removing the distributor from the equation is really a big deal. To do this, they have invested massively in shipping technology, and currently they are basically the leaders in the pack as far as distribution development goes. Now, through removing the distributor from the equation, they basically figured out the cheapest route to get goods from the point of production to the store shelves. And they've actually been able to curtail the prices even further. Part of this can be attributed to the investment in shipping technology that the company has developed, but also, as I mentioned earlier, the cheaper prices are a result of removing the distributor from the equation. And in doing so, Walmart did something that other companies have never done. Now, traditionally, distributors would be responsible for getting products to stores, and producers responsible for getting products to distributors. Now, Walmart stepped in and went right to the producer and said, we'll do all that work for you, and we'll basically save you money at the end of the day. You'll just have to give us this price. Now, initially, this gives Walmart a huge advantage in its pricing, and other stores have to use the distributors. So in the meantime, Walmart has, so the people that have to use the distributors, obviously, they have more expensive products. But the kicker is when Walmart goes through this expansion in the 1990s, it's able to demand even cheaper prices from producers because it buys and sells so many goods. Again, it's the largest producers in this country have become reliant on Walmart by getting its products to customers. For some of those companies, that means at least 30% of their business. So with this huge economic sway that Walmart now has, it begins to set the price for products and not the producers. And this is a massive change in how retail works. because companies can't afford to lose Walmart's business. But Walmart is asking year by year for reduction in prices from producers in order to sell products cheaper than its competitors, and they're relentless about it. This means that, like, if a jar of pickles was $3 last year, it's going to be, you know, $2.80 this year, and if not, Walmart isn't buying from you. Now, since they're unable to compete with Walmart's low prices, right, we hear about local retailers going out of business, but there's also bigger retailers that Walmart is crippled. You think about Kmart, Toys R Us, Winn-Dixie. Now, what this means for workers in these areas is an overall loss of jobs and wages, and eventually an overall reduction in jobs across the board. There's been many studies that have been done that said Walmart stores, when they move in an area, they actually increase the overall rate of poverty. Also, Walmart likes to brag that it creates jobs, but there's been studies done that really in the long term, no jobs are created. So the constant price reduction Walmart demands from its producers is also adding to an overall loss in jobs and wages that isn't initially apparent. Now, initially, for companies, Walmart may sound like a great deal, and, you know, the idea that it's going to buy at a rate producers have never before imagined. However, when Walmart continually demands year by year reduction of price, the producers' profit margins are then lowered. This forces producers basically to do two things. They can either trim as much fat off the production process as possible, or they can lower the wages of its workers, many times doing both. Now, for many companies, this has meant they either go out of business because they can no longer afford to produce, or they ship production overseas to countries where workers have little to no rights, and you can pay them basically whatever the hell you damn well please. So this is Walmart's model, but ironically, in 1985, Walmart began its Buy America campaign, claiming that it would buy American products whenever possible, and that they'd even pay a 5% premium. However, by 1992, Dateline NBC was reporting that Walmart was producing clothes in Bangladesh, smuggling Chinese garments into the U.S. in excess of imported quotas, and placing imported clothes on racks marked made in the USA. So Walmart's Buy America campaign, as soon as this thing was exposed, was basically gone. So today, Walmart has really expanded its practice to an enormous size. And again, with some stats. So if Walmart were a country, it would be China's eighth largest trading partner, which is insane. 80% of the 6,000 factories logged in Walmart's database are actually located in China, and currently 10% of the products imported from China in the United States are a result of Walmart. So you think about like what that actually means in economic terms. Now, as I said, the relocation of production is about access to cheap labor, which translates, in the end of the day, really into awful working conditions for workers in those countries. A study by the National Labor Committee found that workers in one Chinese province who made toys for Walmart worked as much as 130 hours per week, averaging 16.5 cents per hour. Of course, no health care benefits with that. And the same National Labor Committee reported on a Chinese leather goods factory that produces for Walmart where nearly half the workforce earned no wages at all. The company took any earnings basically to pay for training, food, and lodging. One U.S. factory owner actually stated, every time you see the Walmart smiley face whistling and knocking down the prices, somewhere there's a factory worker being kicked in the stomach. And now what this factory owner meant is basically a metaphor is actually, you know, it's a literal truth in many of these factories. In fact, Business Week reported that in one 900-person Chinese factory that locked its employees in the wall factory compounds, the guards would regularly punch and hit workers for talking back to managers or for even walking too fast. And they'd even fine them a dollar for infractions such as taking too long in the bathroom break. One Washington Post article that detailed conditions in a few Chinese factories stated that on a wall of one factory, it said, if you don't work hard today, tomorrow you'll have to try hard to look for a job. So in a sense, you know, this comment on the wall is speaking about, in China, the workers' lack of rights and their And the ability of the boss is to basically kick them out on the street whenever possible. But the other irony of the situation that China is actually experiencing capital flight within China. It's not unheard of for a factory to move to the north because they can get cheaper wages up there. And this is based, I mean, this is where it's at as far as the race to the bottom. Where a number of Walmart vendors have actually expressed concern about rising labor costs in China. And they'll move to actually find cheaper wages. And at the end of the day, this is really the brutal face of capitalist globalization, where even paying 16.5 cents an hour is too high for factory owners to afford. So when we look at this whole process and where it leads, we can begin to conclude that the question, it's really more than about Walmart. I mean, we could just as easily be talking about Whole Foods, we could be talking about Best Buy, we could be talking about Target. Target, for instance, another non-union company, pays its employees $7.25 an hour to start off. In fact, a United Food and Commercial Workers survey found that starting wages at Target and Walmart are pretty similar. In fact, you're actually better off going to Walmart, and it's easier to access its benefits package, and the wages are a little higher. And at the end of the day, what's on the shelves at either store? It is products produced in sweatshops across the board at all these places. So because at the end of the day, right, Walmart needs to be more profitable than Target, and Target needs to be more profitable than Walmart, and this whole cycle that we just went through continues, and the standard of living for workers everywhere ends up being reduced at the end of the day. So the Walmartization of America isn't really about Walmart. Walmart just actually happens to be the largest purveyor in the process. Now, if you think about the example of Cleveland that I began with, we know that Walmart basically had nothing to do with the decline in jobs and the union busting that occurred 30 years prior to it coming in to take advantage of the situation. So obviously the problem is more than Walmart. The problem is really about corporate globalization, which in the end of the day is about the capitalist system. It's going to stop at nothing to make sure that those profit margins are continually increasing. And it will search the world over to find and exploit labor to provide those ends. And I think just looking through a few of the examples using the lens of Walmart, we can kind of conclude that that system is not fit for human consumption. So the question becomes, what do we do about it? Well, in the long term, we need to fight to change the system that's based on profit and turn it into one that's based on human need. That's the long term. What do we do in the short term becomes really the question that we're here to talk about. We need to rebuild the left, which also means rebuilding a fighting labor movement in this country, which means a labor movement that is willing to take on the largest private employer in the country. Now, that leads to the question about the ability to unionize Walmart. Now, the first thing necessary to unionize Walmart would be discontent amongst its workers. And it exists. All we really have to do is look at the fact that the turnover rate at Walmart is about 50% a year. And that's actually down from 70%, but it's still incredibly high. And just for a few concrete examples about the discontent at Walmart, just this year at one Florida store, half the day shift quit in protest after one third shift employee was accused of theft and fired. And that employee was eventually fired back after everybody quit. In another store, 20 workers marched on management after a 70-year-old worker had her schedule changed, and then her schedule was changed back in just a couple of days. And then again, if you've read Barbara Ehrenreich's book, Nickeled and Dined, she basically takes the end where she knows she's going to get fired from Walmart and she's going to run an experiment throwing out the word union. You know, she refers to it as the five-letter word. But she gets a tremendous response from people within Walmart. There's even the one scene where she's describing another strike from local hotel employees on TV. One of her co-workers in the break room jumps up and puts her fist in the air. Right? I mean, that's the discontent with employees at Walmart. But the second thing necessary to unionize Walmart would be unions actually willing to fight the battle. And the battle, it's not going to be easy, because basically right now Walmart is a union busting machine. Managers are trained in union busting through sort of a campy anti-union video that they provide. Managers are given a manager's toolbox to remain union free that comes with an anti-union hotline. If employees even mention the word union, they're often fired within days. So any type of and then any type of union drive that actually does start to get a hold within Walmart, Walmart actually have a private jet that they fly out with a team, a union busting team that usually goes into the store. They basically demote or fire the manager, and they make sure that no union is going to exist there. When you unionize your drive at Walmart, actually does gain some ground. When you think about the one that occurred in Jacksonville, Texas, where the meat department actually won the right to be recognized as a union, and it was the first one that had ever happened in the country. And Walmart's response was basically to cut the meat department out of 180 stores, including the Jacksonville store, basically trying to make a point. However, and this becomes like the idea that Walmart will shut down and move if it becomes unionized. I think, you know, it's true to a point, but they really can't make this practice widespread. And it's in the model of Walmart, right? Their yearly profits are about $9 billion, but it's not. When you look at Microsoft, which is about 126, they have $12 billion in profit, so they actually have more. Its whole business model for profit is about expansion, right? They need to cut workers' wages, which they've done dramatically, right? But they also need to expand, which means they have these enormous plans for getting all over the country, right? They want to expand this year by 8.4% alone. In Chicago, for instance, they want to build 20 Walmart stores in Chicago over the next 10 years. Now, this means this whole business model, what they want to do, means that their ability to actually take off and move around in the face of workers organizing is going to become more and more complicated for them and more limited. Again, fighting unions are going to be necessary to organize Walmart, and this means a number of things. First and foremost is the presence of real union organizing drives or real money into organizing. Organizing that's going to have to occur store by store. There's really no shortcut to going forward with that. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union, the ones that unionized the Jacksonville store, did basically attempt an organizing campaign throughout the 1990s, but it was basically really essentially a publicity war against the company instead. After the UFCW loss in 2003 grocery strike, they basically called off their Walmart campaign. And in the meantime, they're basically funneling all their money into Wake Up Walmart, which is, you know, it's really nothing more than an internet site voted to put in a bad name on Walmart. Now, at the same point in time, there's Walmart Watch, which the SEIU has put $1 million into making sure it gets going. But this, too, is basically just a publicity campaign about Walmart. And this is the extent of labor's sort of fight at this point in time around Walmart. And it's exceptionally strange when there is a study just done, and when Americans were asked that, do you believe that Walmart may provide low prices, but these prices come with a high moral and economic cost, 4 in 10 Americans said, yes, we do. So the word's obviously out about Walmart, and they're putting all this money into what they see as, like, this is the thing we have to do now. On top of this, Walmart has the largest private truck fleet. The Teamsters basically have nothing on their website outside of two paragraphs and this vague idea about an organizing drive. I'm not even sure if it's an organizing drive in Texas. Now, this was the Teamsters that at one point in time in this country had the power to shut the country down, aren't willing to take on Walmart and their 10,000 truck fleet. So that's part of it. But the other part of the question is that there has to be some serious political questions as well. This means that unions have to break with the Democrats. And now, Walmart is a right-leaning corporation, right? For example, they banned John Stewart's book, America. Right, they actually removed a T-shirt from the store at one point in time that said a woman could be president, and they said it was against the company sort of ethics. So while Walmart may lean to the right, that doesn't mean that labor should actually be looking to the Democrats. We need to remember that it was Bill Clinton that put forward NAFTA, and at the end of the day, the Democrats really haven't done anything for labor. And just to put the nail in the coffin around this argument with Walmart, I think this really does is the fact that the Democrats' next presidential hopeful, Hillary Clinton, actually sat on the board of directors for Walmart while Bill Clinton was governor in Arkansas. So if there's really any questions about the Democrats unionizing and the biggest company in this country, I think it should be answered there. Also, labor in this country, if Walmart is going to be unionized and labor is going to move forward, it has to take on immigrants' rights and amnesty. People may remember that 60 Walmart stores were raided in 2002 by a federal immigrant rights agent, and 250 undocumented workers who were working as janitors, really as a subcontractor of Walmart, were arrested. Now, these workers were expected to work 7 days a week with only 1 or 2 days off a year for just barely minimum wage. In addition, these workers had no health care benefits, whatever, were cheated of overtime. And I think this shows why we need to fight for amnesty and oppose any kind of guest worker programs like the one being put forward in the Hagel-Martinez bill. Otherwise, the exploitation of these workers will continue and their rights will be further stripped away, while companies like Walmart basically get a free pass to continue their labor practices. Now, Walmart cannot be unionized if its employees have two different sets of rights. Okay, that'll be a disappointment. So what the left does, what it argues, and how it builds is going to be key to pushing this forward, this question forward about Walmart, but also the labor movement forward. This includes not just arguing about independence from the Democrats and a call for amnesty for all those who are undocumented, but also a fight for women's rights, because no woman should have to be limited to her choice of where she can obtain birth control, and no woman should have to live on the wages of Walmart and have to raise a family. And then have little or no access to child care, health care, et cetera. And this also means a fight for civil rights, because in terms of Walmart and its racist hiring practices, and then we look at unemployment amongst black youth in this country, it's obvious these two things can go hand in hand. Now, the struggle that we put forward also has to be an international struggle. You think about those workers in China or the workers in South America that have to undergo the same conditions. But the other side of it, too, is to remember that in 2004, Chinese workers were witness to 74,000 mass protests, which is, I mean, they're speaking up about what needs to happen there, and we need to join them in that battle. So the first step for either the left or the labor movement in this country is likely not going to be Walmart. But what we do now to build the left will matter if the conditions are going to be set to actually take on the retail giant.
Walmart's real explosion was in the 90s, and if you think real hard about that, you can put together Clinton, Arkansas, China, and that was just, you know, that it's such an obvious thing that I just looked at a map one day and I was like, holy shit, duh. And so it was just a real quick one.
I just want to say people can say their names and where they're from.
Spencer, University of Boston.
Brian from Champaign, Illinois. We talked a lot about Walmart a lot of statistics about Walmart, but I'm more curious about, Walmart is the most extreme of the corporations exploiting workers and doing the most. You describe this race to the bottom, but the question is the race with who? Obviously other corporations are out there that look to Walmart as a model, but who are those corporations? And I mean, how severe are they in pursuing the same business model as Walmart is? Are there any, you know, corporations that, you know, I mean, despite the very fact that they're being that they are a corporation, have any merits to them whatsoever?
Yeah, I'm David from LA. Just to start to answer that, if you think back a couple of years ago to the Southern California grocery workers strike, one of the key arguments that the grocery workers' bosses relied on was trying to get ordinary people around California and around the Southwest and around the country to say, because one of the big fights that the grocery workers were in was over health care. So one of the big arguments they relied on, and this came out in opinions pieces and stuff like that, workers, and this is kind of, workers were working very hard at places like Walmart, don't even have health care. And here are grocery workers making $17 an hour, unwilling to pay $100 or $150 a month toward their health care, and that just isn't fair to the rest of us. And partially, I mean, I can, you know, can even go into some of those arguments that reverberate around disputes that, I'm in a teacher's union, disputes that teachers get into, but part of the Walmartization of America is making the reality of the worst conditions in the country seem increasingly normal as much as possible. And so it's an ideological battle that then unions have to turn around and fight. It's difficult when a lot of our labor leaders aren't actually fighting for their own members, much less spending more money in the labor movement to unionize the non-unionized workers. And so that's a battle that I think dissidents have to go for, but I just have to really push. But it's a very important argument, and it unfortunately has resonance with a lot of people. I mean, it was a big, you had teachers in my union saying, yeah, why are grocery workers demanding so much for healthcare? We're going to kind of have to give up healthcare as well. So it's one way to look at what's going on.
Hi, I'm Belen from D.C. I would say that I think the Walmart effect, that's something that every corporation, every company would like to emulate. Like they would love it if they could have it that way, too. That's what they try to do constantly. There's this idea of good capitalists, those that want to be nice to their workers. But the reality of capitalism is that is not possible. There's a limit to that. Capitalism is about competition. If you want to survive in that kind of market, that's what you're going to have to do. But with companies like Walmart that pay nothing, they pay wages that are poverty wages. And so just to sort of talk about that question, that's the dream thing for companies, for bosses. And that's what they try to do every single day. And what I wanted to say about the transport, I remember that when the transportation workers were on strike here not too long ago, one of the things that we would see on the TV from DC was that people were being like, they get, you know, I don't remember how much exactly they get paid, but they get, you know, above, they get like more than $10 an hour. Like, it's, you know, an alright wage, I guess, considering what some people get these days. And they have, you know, some benefits. But I don't think it's right to be like, they have it better than people like Walmart, the people at Walmart, for example. And therefore, what are they asking for? Like, what else do they want? We actually should all be fighting for it. It's not about he already has benefits and I don't. What does he want? What else does he want? But it's actually, we should all be getting benefits. We should all be getting fair wages. And not only stop that, like, I would say that we not only need to get fair wages, but we should be able to try to take control of, you know, production and be our own bosses, stuff like that, like, ourselves. But I just wanted to speak to those questions.
First, you right here.
Yeah, just, you know, I agree with what people have said, that's sort of, you know, all companies would have it that way if they could, but just more specifically, a couple months ago, I know Unite here, the unions were on the streets in Chicago passing out flyers saying that Hilton is the Walmart of hotels, so I don't know if anybody else knows more about that.
Yeah, my name is Dina. I'm a graduate student here at Columbia. And going back to the idea of like solidarity with people internationally, like the proletariat internationally, like a lot of people, we bring up like the idea of Walmart being an oppressive force and stuff, like who don't already agree, like I'm sure most of us in this room do agree, often cite the case that like, well, it's creating jobs in China and these people would otherwise be living in abject poverty. And I think that's something like we as a movement need to like be able to address and like create alternatives to, because it's like one thing to say like a long-term goal is to create like, you know, a cohesive like socialist movement, but like in the short term people have like some portal needs to meet, such as like, you know, food and like shelter, and as terrible as it is, like, you know, I mean, you have to like realize that like there's nothing else than an idea between like sweatshops and terrible labor conditions and abject poverty, people are going to still choose the former over the latter. So I was wondering if maybe you could address like the idea of the fair trade movement. I mean, it's not like the utopian, like it's not at least like, I mean, it's not the best thing, which probably would be like moving towards socialism, obviously, but I mean, for a short term kind of solution, or at least something that would give people a way to like make means, like make their ends meet and stuff. I was wondering if you could address that.
I'll say when questions come out, other you know, other folks can feel free to ask them as well, because Bob can come back in whenever he wants, but probably could want to take a breather and then come back at the end to wrap up. So if there's a question that you feel like you can provide an answer to, please feel free. Sorry.
My name is Dave. I'm from Wayne, Connecticut, and I worked in retail for a long time, and yeah, Walmart's the biggest fish, but they're not the only fish. I would say that most retail and fast food places run on the same principle. Hire them cheap, keep them for a few months, then they make a noise, out the door. And it hurts, they're really, I think it hurts their business in some way too, which it should. Because now I work for the Sports Authority, that's a company that pushes that sales and customer service. You're treating your employees like that, in some ways, at one time, they're really going to slit your own neck.
And
Dave,
do you have any questions?
Yeah.
I was going to say, in terms of free trade, I absolutely think that we should pressure our government for certain labor laws. But I think that like the problem with free trade is that like the reason why Walmart is so successful is because it doesn't only drive out small and mom and pop shops. It drove Kmart out of business, because it was even more successful than Kmart at like raising these massive profits by like paying workers, you know, these slave wages. And the problem with you know, fair trade is that like there's literally Walmart is able to, the reason Walmart is so successful is that it can price its stuff so cheap. And the reason it can price stuff so cheap is because it exploits, you know, not only workers, but like, you know, middlemen so much more effectively than any other, even multinational corporation. And so, like, if you're going to have fair, you know, and that's the, so fair trade is like, and this is like, it's kind of an analogy, but it's just like, it's this constant competition where, even if, you know, there's just no way to, the laws of the market are such that, like, you know, people are so poor as it is, and you're going to, you know, so you're going to buy the cheapest products, and it's like this continuous cycle of life. The only way, really, is, we need a revolution to unionize Walmart? No, but we do need a public movement that can fight back against it. I would argue that there should be an entire society that creates an organization that won't have a Christmas.
Hi, I'm Glenn from Chicago. And I think one of the things that we need to remember, like this argument that we have to compete with Walmart, there's a race to the bottom, right? This is universal across capitalism, right? I mean, they're currently, for the Delphi, which is not in competition with Walmart, is reducing wages, or their proposal is to reduce wages to, I believe, $12 an hour for new hires, if I'm not wrong, which isn't that much higher than Walmart. And this is also one of the jobs that used to be a good-paying union job, right? It's not just these new economy or whatever, the Walmart and service sector thing. And what we need, people have mentioned this, but I mean, it's ridiculous that we have a union which is limiting their opposition to Walmart to corporate campaigns, right? To bad publicity, or right, which is aside from the fact that the corporate campaigns are because of, right, that's the idea that we just do bad publicity and that's somehow going to win better wages. We need a fighting labor movement that actually takes on and actually organizes in the different unions. Because this thing is true that there's a race to the bottom. Walmart is a poor paying, dangerous job. But it wasn't that long ago that the steel working jobs, the auto working jobs, those used to be dangerous, nasty, poor paying jobs, right? And before the massive labor unionization drives and the militant labors in the 30s, those were dangerous, horrible, poor paying jobs, right? All the stuff that used to be the truck driving up until the 60s, 70s, you know, the labor, all these things. That's what my grandfather took part in the Boeing strike in Seattle. He took part in the Boeing strike after World War II. He told me it's before that, people weren't paying any money and they had to work in horrible conditions. It's a fighting labor movement that actually changes these things. It's not in the nature of the job or in the or any of these things. It's actually what people fight for is what should is what should is what should get.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more with that sentiment. I think that when we talk about retail and fast food, I really agree with what you're saying in terms of the conditions and the logic of the thing. But I think, as other people said, it is not just retail anymore. I mean, UPS, what has been UPS's corporate management strategy and how to deal with its workforce? Get rid of full-time jobs, bring in a bunch of part-timers. You know, who cares if they only work there for 6 months? All the better. Then they can never check into the benefits package that you lured them with in the first place. You know, when UPS went on strike in 1995, that battle, the whole slogan of it was, this is a fight against part-time America. Part-time America will not work. United Airlines today, the entire airline industry declaring bankruptcy, getting protection for their debts, for the corporate debts, as they steal the pensions and wages of their employees. I mean, I think that what Bob started off with in terms of the picture and what that means in human terms, that nowhere in this economy is any worker safe anymore. Work at any of these corporations has always been brutal and dehumanizing and ugly. But at least you used to have the idea that maybe when you were 65, you could stop working and chill out for a while and spend some time with your wife and grandkids. Oh, no. That is gone. Retirement is gone. And so that's what this economy and the race to the bottom, that's what competition really means. And that's why, you know, there aren't any good corporations that we can sort of point to and say, hey, use that. I mean, fair trade is another example of that, where fair trade is now a marketing tool used by corporations like Starbucks and Whole Foods and other union-busting corporations to try and play on the idea amongst consumers that they're actually doing something to help the planet or to help, you know, sustainable agriculture, to help poor farmers. When in fact, I think what we have to look to is, we have to look to organizing the collective power of workers at the point of production. That means organizing Walmart workers and everybody else, as people have said.
Yeah, basically everybody's stayed really nice and short. I just want to say that there is a little bit of a list forming, so I'm going to try to be sure to keep people for 3 minutes. And because there is a list and there's about 18 minutes left in the discussion portion, definitely get your hand off if you would like to speak. But the fellow right behind us.
I'm Eric from Burlington. So just to continue on, it's not just retail. Just to reiterate what Walmart does to its suppliers, which are manufacturers, like Huffy. They are pressuring Huffy to sell their bikes to them cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And eventually Huffy said, well, we can't do it here anymore. Move their factory, I think, it goes to Mexico. So and I think it was Velasco Pickles, they actually bankrupted because they couldn't supply pickles for a cheap enough price. So that puts pressure on all the workers at those factories. Mm-hmm. So it spreads to the entire industrial segment of the U.S. economy. About unionizing Walmart, I mean, I think you can't underestimate how immensely difficult that would be. It's a gigantic company. They have millions of workers all over the country. You need solidarity from the entire country, which is non-existent in the labor movement as it stands right now. And so I am like really pessimistic about the prospects of doing that without a massive upturn in the labor movement and struggle. But I did hear from someone, I don't know, I think it was last year, maybe at Socialism last year, an idea of how to start unionizing Walmart by focusing on the distribution centers, which there are only a handful of around the country. And they utilize like just-in-time delivery, so that when they run out of product at the store, that's when they get it in from the truck. And if you could stop the deliveries of product at the stores, you effectively shut down their machine.
Brian from Rochester. I'll start with Spencer, who suggested, I like the idea that the ascent of Walmart in the 90s coinciding with Bill Clinton in the White House was somehow kind of the rising of Arkansas Star for a while. Nice thought. But actually, what we get, I think, with Walmart, it's such a weird company. I mean, God, it's like they take just absolute logical conclusion, must make profit. And that's all they do, and they hire banks and lawyers to you know, pursue it. You plug it in and it goes along. It's the most ruthless profit war. That's Sam Walton's book, right? It's a minute obsession with profit and how to squeeze the most out. And there you've got the company which does this. And it's got the most aggressive business plan around. No stone unturned. If you can find a way to squeeze any kind of profit out, do it. It goes from the grotesque, like janitor insurance. Did anybody read that story in the New York Times a few years ago? Walmart and other companies take out insurance on their employees for themselves as beneficiaries. So if this greeter, this elderly person, dies, Walmart will be the beneficiary to their death. Right? So, clearly bizarre, they can't do it on a big scale, but they'll do it. To the point of actually engineering a basic shift in the distribution of world productive capital, because that is what has happened in the last dozen years. The fact that they could force their suppliers to set up shop in China meant that there's a huge, none of the stuff is produced in the United States anymore. They had to shut down and go elsewhere. It wasn't just, I think it's a good idea. If they wanted to do business with Walmart, they had to do it. And what that has meant in terms of the choices facing world capital now is that anything goes. That is, it costs as much to open a factory in China or Sri Lanka as it does in the United States or Canada. We're just going to go where the labor is the lowest. What is happening, I will argue, in globalization, Walmart is playing a key part of this, is an overall imposition of a new, lower, standard average value to labor power, to workers' wages, that is going to be the pressure from here on out that workers in every economy have to face. And Walmart, historically, I guess you could say, is like the cutting edge of that. They're just the most ruthless and biggest agglomeration of capital trying to do that up to this point. But that's going to define, in many respects, a lot of the struggles that we're fighting against in the years ahead.
Thanks. At this point, I'm going to try to limit speakers to 2 minutes because we are nearing the speakers. So I'm going to hold on to your comment and later on.
Just real quick on like the sweatshops versus isn't that better than nothing? Which I think that kind of like limits the time frame a little bit, because it wasn't like there was just nothing and then there was like sweatshop. In a lot of cases, it's a process. The process of globalization has been about corporations going into different countries, through World Trade, WTO, World Bank, and destroying local economies. And at that point, flooding the market with U.S. products, destroying local economies, and creating a situation where then, a sweatshop makes a lot of sense for them, because, your whole domestic industry has been wiped out. And I think, Life After Debt, this documentary about the impacts of that sort of process on Jamaica, I think it's Jamaica, and I think it's like, it just,
you know, I think like that, like, you know, focusing on just like, oh, there was nothing and then there was a sweatshop is like a disingenuous way to like to look at actually how the process of globalization and capitalist expansion has worked over the past like 30, 40 years. And secondly, really quick, just interesting thing that's actually happening right now in terms of organizing of retail employees is that the SEIU actually has just launched a national campaign that's a shoot-up of the Justice for Genders campaign called the Justice for Mall Workers campaign. And their whole idea is to look at security guards and janitors at retail, you know, mall workers. So, I mean, overall, the retail sector now employs 12 million people. So, I mean, like, Walmart is the single biggest, but, I mean, like, in terms of 12 million workers, most of whom are not unions. But, you know, the first place they, since this is an offshoot of Justice for Genders, the first place they're doing it is Miami, where they just recently won an organizing drive at the University of Miami. And, you know, so, and there's the same subcontractor does the janitorial work for the university and the mall across the street. So it's like janitors work for the same company. It's like these guys organize, so why don't we organize? You know, it's like, well, and this is largely kind of an immigrant labor pool. So I think that like part of that conflict is coming out of the French movement. But then, so on the first day they were going to do this, the Department of Homeland Security calls the union office and says, "What are you guys doing? Why are you guys going to the mall for?" You know, it's like just to completely harass them. So it's like, I don't know, like it's sort of a, like a strange dynamic. But I think like the final thing is I think that like as you know there is something. I think this campaign, I don't know, like it's just in its beginning. So at least it's something that is on the offensive, trying to organize people. That's maybe something that you keep an eye on.
Coming from the Salito Internacional in Puerto Rico, and I also work as a union official, union representative for the Pepsi-Cola employees in Puerto Rico. And you know the main reason for unions, the union had for you know now organized is because organizing costs less. You know, you need to put money for local organizers, pay tiene que pagar defensa, legales, de las personas que despiden, de la gente que está ayudando a organizar que despiden.
Anyway, es una hipocresía bien grande porque piensas en todo el dinero que muchas uniones, sobre todo en Estados Unidos, gastan making loving, promoviendo reformas, leyes desde arriba, con los congresistas, dándole dinero a partidos y a candidatos en esos partidos, pues es realmente una pérdida de recursos, ¿sabes? Es correcto.
But in a way, she says it's a contradiction because also unions spend a lot of money paying, lobbying, trying to get some play among politicians, agendas in the government.
En Puerto Rico muchas personas pensaban que organizar por ejemplo los empleados de Walmart tomaría que se creara una coalición de diferentes uniones que estén dispuestas a meterle mano al monstruo.
Okay. Because we have Walmart in Puerto Rico too.
Yeah.
Okay. The opinion of most unions is that there must be some kind of coalition that takes care of all these expenses. And all the little battles that will come with organizing Walmart employees.
pero muy pocas mujeres están interesadas en
eso.
Pero tienes un interés en ellos. A menudo, los sectores de Puerto Rico, por ejemplo, han puesto sus esfuerzos en promover boicots contra compañías como Walmart, no tanto por el tratamiento que le dan a los trabajadores y trabajadoras, sino porque por la amenaza que ellos representan para las empresas locales y las empresas nativas.
Many people in the left, what they do is organize boycotts against Walmart, not in the interest of workers, but because they want to protect local businesses that are usually displaced by Walmart,
And at the end of the day, in Puerto Rico and in the United States as well, are so discredited or so full of corruption and so on that they don't even represent an alternative for vote for a lot of workers. So people working in Walmart, they don't even ask question themselves whether they would like to join a union. Anyway, I just want to say that recently Walmart made an announcement that they would buy organic products and that they would just for washing their image. And I think that I buy in Walmart because I know lots of people that do so because it's not just Walmart, it's Sam's Club, it's that it's because they are.
How should we run to the next speaker? So I have the fact is worth of you.
Don't pass me.
Yeah, you're next.
I'll pass.
Oh, okay.
I'll make it short. I'm Jeremy from Kent, Ohio, and actually it's in between Cleveland and Youngstown. I'm originally from Youngstown, so I'm in the heart of the Rust Belt. Real quickly, I just want to talk about, in 2002, I'm sure many of you are aware, there were hundreds of complaints by women workers from Walmart that they were forced to clock out and then work overtime without any pay, and that's because of no union. Another thing is I actually know of a former worker that worked at Walmart briefly who was fired for not talking about a union, but simply talking to another coworker about Woody Guthrie, the socialist folk singer from the Depression era, the road, this land is your land. They were sent to the office, the manager's office. The manager was like, well, you're talking about somebody who's in opposition to our policy. Ironically enough, Woody Guthrie died decades before Walmart even started. It's just like, not only talking about union, but just people that are pro-union, you can get fired for. So.
Hi, I'm Ty from San Diego. I just wanted to touch again on globalization, and it's not. I think we have to look at it as government policy and as economic policy. And Thomas Friedman, who's this pro-globalist, said that McDonald's would not be possible without the invisible hand of McDonnell Douglas, who the guys who make F-15s. And that's what's going on. What's going on in the world is that, when people talk about it's better to have a corporation come in, and these people will work there for minimum wage or whatever. The thing is that those people are poor because of government policies and because of economic, wars against them. That poverty is created, structural adjustment programs and all that. That kind of enabled Walmart, to create all these manufacturing plants, in these areas. And it's just part of the whole globalization scheme, I think.
I'm Brandon from Madison, but actually my hometown is Superior, Wisconsin. It's kind of interesting that Walmart is sort of how I got interested in activism in the first place, because when I was in high school, there was a little thing in the newspaper, Walmart's now going to become a super Walmart in our town, only a town of 30,000, and So we have a lot of small businesses that obviously directly negatively affected. But the thing is that they built the first Walmart on wetlands. In fact, we have a lot of wetlands up there. Of course, they said that they'd replace them, but we know that it's you know, somewhat irreplaceable. But when Super Walmart, that's a little hard to show up in the paper, I went and talked to our mayor. And the thing is that, you know, there was no referendum for this, for them to come. There was actually little notice of it even coming, even though when I talked to the mayor, apparently the permits had already been granted. And it really bothered me. You know, my mayor, he told me that one of the unions for our local grocers had sent him this 200-page packet and he would look at it. But basically, he couldn't do anything about it because he had, you know, the permits were signed before. It's ridiculous. I also have some other little things about Walmart, too. I mean, they decided that for a few pennies more, they could go to a Chinese lock company, it's Master Lock, so Master Lock had to lay off 200 of their people. Also, with the blast of pickles, the official reason, they didn't say it was because Walmart decided not to go with them, but it had to do with these big, like, 5 pound things, jars of pickles, and it was probably Walmart that bankrupted them. Then there's the clothing factories in China. There's approximately 1,000 clothing factories in China. There's some things I wanted to, for Walmart, that, I just wanted to add a few things about it. A lot of the women that work in the sewing parts of the factories, you know, they're fired if they're pregnant, they work 16-hour days, and even in fact, they've restricted their water breaks, so restrict how much water they can drink so that they don't go to the bathroom as often. I mean, it's ridiculous. And yes, fighting Walmart, unionizing Walmart would be a really big fight. But in regards to how that would come about, you know, we're talking about boycotts. But if you take, you know, 1,000 people just decide not to shop at Walmart, it's not that big of an effect. What needs to happen is 1,000 workers decide not to work on one day, shut down, you know, a few Walmarts here and there. I mean, of course, you know, that would take a lot of time and a lot of organization, but it has to start somewhere. And it's absolutely possible. The thing is about boycotting Walmart, too, a lot of people that are poor, because products are cheap, we just had in this room before this one, we talked about alternate lifestyles and, you know, one politics of alternate lifestyles. The thing is that, you know, for people that need to shop at Walmart because, you know, they don't have enough money to buy, you know, whatever diapers or, you know, something necessary for the family to go to Walmart for, you shouldn't condemn them for it. You know, you should. So boycotting isn't necessarily the best way to go. But anyway, and the final thing, also, Walmart, I think, gives back less than 1% of the money they make, but even more than that, all the money that they do make just gets sent back to Bentonville, Arkansas. And so, I mean, let alone 1% going back to the community, but paying workers less, it's like extracting a lot of wealth from, you know, small communities across the United States. Oh, and also, they tried to form a bank called the National Bank of Walmart. That was, I don't know, maybe you could talk more about it if you had any interest. I know that it's somewhat put the kibosh in place, but I don't really know much more about it.
Okay, so there's a few more minutes for discussion before Bob comes back. So if there's any last, so Spencer, actually, there were some speakers who spoke, but maybe got cut off. If there's anything you want to throw out before Bob comes back.
I wanted to just say that, you know, we, with Walmart specifically, you see a huge variety of issues. You have your outsourcing to these different companies. You have the way that the company itself runs its business model, you know, employing part-time, not getting health insurance, you know, advising people how to get government assistance. And, you know, I think maybe with the Walmart issue, you have to look at it from a much larger scope than just a specific thing. You know, people have spoken about union and the importance of unionizing. But let's be honest, like people said about the airlines, the union sold a lot of people out, did nothing for them. And then, you know, you look at something like GM, the Volvo branch of GM that does, you know, pays their people well, keeps people informed, they don't have to deal with turnover. And the results of cities that have worked on universal living wage campaigns and stuff like that, you see how by treating employees better, you can cut out your turnover, cut out your training periods, cut out your sick periods, cut out all that stuff. And, you know, when you talk about the race to the lowest, I live in Austin now, but I used to live in Kansas. And so I've watched all these really small towns get destroyed by Walmart. Walmart comes in to force all the companies out. Everybody goes and works at Walmart, and then the only thing anybody can afford is the Walmart. So the Walmart pays the employees, and the employees come shop at the Walmart and just turn all this money around. And then, you know, I've watched Dell. You know, Dell was created in Austin. They got all these tax breaks and built these huge campuses. And then as soon as, you know, their couple years leases go out, if their tax breaks are over, they take all that money they get on the tax break. They take all the money they get on the reinvestment, and then they move their locations overseas. You know, and it is, you know, I remember when they had the Made in America slogan. I remember when that was their commercial. And, you know, not to downplay the importance of Kmart, you know, like you said, how they destroyed Kmart. You know, they destroyed these companies by killing the small towns and then exploiting it outside of Microsoft. You know, they exploited in the late 90s, not the early 80s.
Somebody can have 1 minute.
I wanted to add just one sentence. I mentioned the grocers union that, you know, sent my mayor. Well, a few months after Super Walmart came, one of our local grocery stores closed down.
Well, I don't know. I just wanted to maybe take it a little bit, talk a little bit of the other side for a second, just to say that even though we live in a period that's very tough in terms of organizing and unions are corrupt and the bureaucracy and all sorts of things like that, I think that most of us here at least believe that we can change things by doing the kind of activism that we do, and in some way or another, at some point be able to, you know, take control of not just our lives, but also of production and so on. But what I wanted to say is that we have to remember that even though circumstances, just not in Walmart, but in Target and other companies, what they are right now for employees that make minimum wage or poverty wages, there was a moment when there wasn't unions at all, and people had no rights whatsoever for organizing or for going to the bathroom at crappy rates. And people had, you know, it's never been easy to fight for these kinds of things, for your rights. It's never been an easy thing. People have been in much more difficult situations than we are right now, I would say. And I just wanted to sort of bring that to light in that, you know, in that it is belief. Like, it is a difficult situation where people have struggled past this kind of situation. And there is a possibility and a potential to actually build and change changes. We just have to find a way on how to do that.
Okay, so I can pull that bomb and come back and comment.
The whole idea of this talk isn't very straightforward. It's not like we're talking directly like, well, what about the immigrants' rights struggle, and then we go out on the street and, you know, fight for the immigrants' rights in this country. It's like Walmart, and we need to unionize Walmart, and there's like 40 of us in the room. It's pretty, you know, it's like, well, okay, there's the task and there's where we're at, you know, and it's like, how do you actually start to get a grasp on it? But I think the thing about Walmart is there's a couple of key points. Number one, it's just that when you look at its business model, it's not an exception to capitalism. It's actually just figured out the capitalist model very well and going forward with it, right? On one half, you have the investment in technology, which it does really well, and it's getting some profit out of that. But on the other half, you have the extreme exploitation of workers. And I think it is the case in point for saying why this system is so messed up and why we need to actually organize to change it. But at the end of the day, too, but it's not just Walmart. It's just as much Target, right? The only thing with Target is they have a better publicity campaign. They put all kinds of money into making their stores look better and making people feel a bit more squishy when they're in there. And, people don't think about it. Like, in Chicago, when Walmart came in and was talking about building this store there, there was all kind of community groups that were out on the streets and we'd open a Walmart. But at the same time, Target went in and built, you know, a bunch of stores, which, you know, we need stores, it's fine, we need good, but the question needs to be, like, are we actually unionizing people and giving people decent wages? And that's where that struggle needs to be. I think, you know, the stuff around fair trade, I think, you know, the talk earlier today on coffee, people should get that. I only drink fair trade coffee. It was really good putting that forward, but I think, you know, the other thing is, the working conditions for the people that actually work in fair trade. I was in Thailand. I was at a place that made fair trade rice, I would rather work at the place that didn't make fair trade rights, quite frankly, and it's about because those people that made the fair trade rights had to work 10 hours a day more, and they sat out in the sun while there was a perfectly good machine down the street that actually made, you know, the rice and did the same job that these women had to do sitting out in the sun. But at the end of the day, that was fair trade rice, right? But, it, you know, it's like there was this thing down the street that, like, they could be using to do the same job, right? You know, you look at the conditions at the end of the day, the reality of it, and it's not this glamorous sort of thing. At the end of the day, it needs to be about people's lives, your daily conditions at work, whether it's at the, you know, the place with the rice or at Walmart. The other thing, too, is that the history is there in retail for unionized. Now, we look at Walmart, it's like it is this huge thing, but unions also have lots of money that they could be putting into this, and they have in the past. A&P, the great Atlantic and Pacific tea company, once controlled 80% of groceries in this country. Like, you never think about, right, the old A&Ps. Like, and they were the reason for a lot of different pricing laws that exist now because they were ruthless, and they're ruthless to their employees. But UFCW needs to go inside and look at its history, because it actually did unionize the A&P, and it did it over like a 5 to 10 year process, and it had to go store by store, but it actually won at the end of the day. And that's what we need to get back to at this point in time. And the questions in that really are, you know, about the union movement, but it is also about what the left does in this country, right? You can imagine a battle, you know, like the immigrants' rights stuff going on right now, that winning, and what those janitors that have to work at Walmart who are undocumented, right, and then winning that battle and then saying, well, what can we do next? Why don't we actually change the conditions in this workplace next? And I think that's how we're going to actually see a spark that's going to take this on. But again, it's not just Walmart. It's the entire system that we live under that's actually driving this process. Walmart just happens to be the biggest purveyor of it.